You're listening to highlights from the Creative Processes interview with Laura Eason, an Emmy-nominated producer, screenwriter, and playwright. This podcast is supported by the Jan Michalski Foundation.
I grew up in Chicago, spent most of my childhood there. I did move in high school and lived in Colorado for a couple of years, but born and raised in Chicago and was just really focused on life there and didn't really think about having a big career on the national stage. Like, I really went and saw theater as a kid in Chicago, and that really was my dream, to be a theater artist in Chicago. So that was the path that I was on, and though I had friends that went to LA right out of school, for me, film and television had a big veil of mystery around it. I didn't know people in the industry. I didn't see a pathway. So for me, I could go to Steppenwolf, I could go to the Goodman and see these plays and see a potential future there. But for me, film and television was like, how does anyone do that? How does anyone get into that industry? And it's one of the reasons why now it's very important for me to mentor, like through the Writers Guild East and other development programs. I think there continues to be less so because you can Google everything, but it feels important to me to kind of dispel some of the mystery in terms of how one gets into film and television. I talk about how the work that I did in the theater prepared me to write for television in ways I really didn't anticipate. Particularly the work I've done as a playwright was very split between original work and adaptation. And being in a writer's room for the first time and understanding that the job was to try and match the voice of the show or the voice of the showrunner, I really had the revelation of, oh, this is adaptation. I'm trying to match the voice and I have to bring my full self and all of my ideas. But it felt very analogous to what I had done in adaptation, and I didn't expect that. And it was really helpful to have had that experience going into television writing. Three Women is based on Lisa Tadeo's New York Times bestselling nonfiction book. And I was brought on to supervise the pilot before the pilot was written. It was always the plan that Lisa would be very, very involved in the adaptation. She was going to write the pilot, be an executive producer, and not all novelists obviously are that involved, but this was something that was really foundational to how the adaptation was conceived. So when I came on to work with Lisa, we started before the pilot was written and talked about how she wrote the book and her process. And it became clear to me very early on, which was something Lisa also had a notion of, that the telling, the how of writing the book was as compelling to me. It had its own very strong narrative that was on par with the other stories in the book, in that it was really so woven into how she got these women to be so open with her and share so much of their inner lives with her. So very early on, we made the choice that we wanted a character based on Lisa, not Lisa specifically. We name her Gia. So there's a lot of her story that is informed by Lisa's real story and the real love story with her husband. But also we gave her pseudonyms so we could open it up because Lisa was very open and we both were really interested in allowing the themes of the show and the needs of the show to guide what we did with the Gia character over the course of the season. I think one of the things that can happen with that is when you have characters that aren't related, you kind of gather them in the episodes under a theme or an event that they're all sharing. They're all at a wedding, or it's all about, you know, this particular theme for this episode. And we thought it was going to flatten out the narrative. So having Gia connect them, I think, helped that. But we also made the choice to do standalone episodes because we wanted to really preserve their specificity as characters and not get into that, like, well, this is the theme of the episode and they all have to adhere to that. So that was really important, keeping the specificity and allowing Gia also, though, to have her own story. So she's not just the glue, but she has her own love story and her own arc of coming into her own desire that ends up becoming sort of the emotional backbone of the show. So it has its own integrity as a story, because we definitely didn't want to do just the journalist with the pencil hovering over the notepad saying, you know, tell me more. It really needed to be a story that had its own beginning, middle, end, and strength to be able to stand on its own. That was one of our big hopes with the adaptation. That's very much what we hope people will take away from the experience, is that they don't feel quite so alone. And I think that one of the things that was so powerful about the book is women were reading and able to experience and step into the inner lives of these women. And also to show that a housewife in Indiana who isn't being kissed, a young woman who is taken advantage of by and abused by her teacher, who now is speaking up for herself, but she's in North Dakota and she's a waitress who works at Perkins, that these women deserve to be heard and that they count and their stories count and matter as much as anybody else's. And I think that's something else that the show is saying to the women that are watching, is that your life matters. You don't have to be some aspirational, gorgeous person, although Sloan absolutely is that character. So there's someone for beautiful, aspirational women out in the world as well. But for the other women that are living in the Midwest and having struggles and feeling like, who is seeing me and do I matter? Hopefully the mirror of Lena and the mirror of Maggie will really help them not feel so alone and to know that their stories are really important and really matter. I think we're in an age where there is a lot of self-reflection about who am I and what are my strong opinions, and let me define everything about myself in this very strong, loud way. But for me, I'm equally interested in the other and other people and the ability, as you say, to live many lives through the arts, both in terms of watching other stories and getting to step into other people's shoes and experience and be in rooms that you would never be in otherwise, but also as a writer to be able to inhabit the heart and the headspace of someone that's very different than me. It just feels like the greatest gift. I was an actor for a long time, even though I started writing in junior high school. And I knew ultimately that's what I wanted to do, but I didn't want to be alone in my room. I wanted to be at the party with everybody. So it took me quite a while to finally make the time to sit down and start writing and spend the time alone. And ultimately with the work that I do, I write alone for a while, but then I do get to be with the group. And the goal is to eventually be in a collaborative environment to actually have the thing come to fruition. But it's hard. It's hard to be alone in your room with your art sometimes. And it's a great pleasure. My favorite thing is being in the television writer's room. The thing I love is when we as a group, as a collective, build something unique that no one of us alone could have done, where we're really building on each other's ideas and sensibilities to make this very unique thing that we make collectively. That I love. I love when, oh, I have this idea. Oh, yes, let me build on that. Oh, let me build on that. And then you together have made this thing that none of you could have made alone. Those are just my very favorite days in the writer's room. Just love that. I think the thing that is most exciting to me are people's idiosyncrasies. And the large language models are, you know, you're being fed something that exists, but it's not a new idea. It's like maybe mashing up stuff that has been existing, but it's not a living, breathing human soul with all of its complications and complexities. And I just don't think that that thing will ever be able to replace the spirit. I mean, not to get too existential, but, you know, when someone dies, the body is there, the spirit is gone, and that is no longer the same thing. And to me, the AI feels like the body. It feels like it doesn't have the life spirit that humanity will bring to art. So it maybe will be a good carbon copy for certain people, but it's never going to be the like hot burning flame that humanity and a human soul will bring to art. So I think it'll be great. You know, I'll have a book that I'll be sent and that I'm adapting, and I can say, hey, do chapter summaries for me, AI, so that as I'm doing my adaptation, I can quick check chapter 12 and just like remember if there's a detail I'm forgetting. But I just don't think it's ever going to make something that's truly great or inspired or new. So I think there's plenty that it can do. And maybe with some of the visuals, there's potentially a world where we don't have to go shoot Nebraska, where you can just tell the computer what you want it all to look like. Again, I don't know how that's going to feel. I don't know if it's going to have the same kind of carbon copy, but not essentially the same because it's not the actual place. And of course, I worry about AI being fed the same biases and prejudice and short-sightedness that exists in humanity, and then beginning to just reflect that, feeding back entrenched ideas and not living to a new place. But like everything and like all technology, I think there's probably huge pros and huge cons. So for me, the arts have always been foundational to every day of my life. I grew up in a household where the arts were fundamental. It's just something that was part of, you know, every day. My dad was a businessman, a manager at a company, and my mom did hospital administration. They were not artists, but they loved the arts. And so we went every weekend, we went to the theater, to the symphony, and we were very middle class. We would sit in the way, way, way up cheap seats at the symphony, but we were there. And my parents had favorite artists that they love, and we didn't have original work, but we had prints, you know, or posters of the artists that they love. So it was always part of who I was, and it was always about being curious. And my parents really instilled in me an interest in the other person and listening as hard as you're talking, and probably ideally listening more than you're talking. And I think that's what the arts does for us. It allows us to listen to the inner lives of others. And that is a gift. I feel like I'm getting to live more than my one singular life. And what could be more incredible than that, to have an expansive human experience?
We hope you've enjoyed listening to these highlights. To listen to the latest episodes or learn more about participating in exhibitions or interviews, click on subscribe. Thank you for listening.